Esse podcast faz parte do site Fambonanet. Acesse fambonanet.com.br.
Muito bem, pessoal, estamos começando mais uma edição do Black Yellow Brasil, episódio de número 200, episódio especial, número redondo, marca fantástica aí do nosso podcast, falando sobre Pittsburgh Steelers para todo o Brasil, direto de fambonanet.com.br, Spotify, Apple, Deezer, iTunes, Google Podcasts, de qualquer lugar do mundo onde você esteja, especialmente se esse lugar for Pittsburgh. Nessa edição, de novo, repito, um programa especial, a gente bateu um papo com o Alex Kozora, analista do SteelersDepot.com, provavelmente o maior veículo de mídia independente que fala de Steelers do mundo. A gente não pode assumir esse papel para o Black Yellow, é do Steelers Depot mesmo, uma das grandes referências que a gente tem de cobertura do Steelers, uma das grandes fontes que a gente usa de consulta para muita coisa relacionada ao Steelers. Então, antes de mais nada, acessem lá SteelersDepot.com. Tem uma pequena introduçãozinha em português, mas esse programa é majoritariamente em inglês, uma vez que Alex Kozora é um analista americano, falamos em inglês com ele na live. Então, se você não está muito familiarizado com o inglês a ponto de poder ouvir um programa direto, sem tradução e tal, dá uma chegada no nosso canal do YouTube, dá uma chegada nas nossas redes sociais. A gente anuncia lá quando tiver disponível a versão do vídeo com legenda, tá? Para você acompanhar melhor o que a gente conversou. Tem uma referência do que lá fora estão achando do Steelers e com relação ao Brasil, tá? Então, é isso. Um recado de sempre, só seguir lá o @blackyellowbr no Twitter, no Instagram e no Telegram. Segue também @SteelersDepot, tipo depósito em inglês. Tá? Tem link para tudo isso no post e fica aí com a entrevista que ficou sensacional. Para fazer esse programa, vocês já estão vendo, se vocês estão na live, temos a presença de Germano Coutinho. Muito boa noite, Germano.
Boa noite, Danilo. Boa tarde, boa noite e bom dia para todos os ouvintes, dependendo da hora que vocês vão estar ouvindo esse podcast. Estamos aqui nesse episódio especial, nesse episódio atemporal, e vamos que vamos.
Isso, a presença também de Melina Bortoluso. Muito boa noite, Melina. Seja bem-vinda a mais um programa.
Boa noite, Danilo. Boa noite, pessoal. Boa noite, pessoal que está aí na live. Um prazer estar aqui com vocês no episódio 200 do Black Yellow Brasil. Muito feliz em estar fazendo parte aqui disso.
E agradecer também a presença de Ricardo Rezende, o chefe. Muito boa noite, Ricardo.
Boa noite, gente. Uma satisfação estar aqui. Mais um ano, quarto ano que a gente faz esse episódio mais do que especial. Um dos nossos favoritos. E hoje recebendo um convidado extremamente especial aqui.
É isso, então vamos acionar o modo inglês. Eu espero que o CCA de vocês esteja em dia. We welcome here as our guest, so Alex Kozora from Steelers Depot. Alex, it's a great pleasure for us to have you as our guest. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, guys, so much. I really appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, so tonight we'll be talking about Steelers in a broad way, not just about the draft, but in a more open way. You'll be taking questions for us and from the audience. And allow me to start here asking you from a free agency point of view. We had cuts, we had signings. Do you believe the Steelers put themselves in the best position they could be before the draft? Are they loaded to take more talent than exactly needs?
Yeah, I would phrase it as they made the best of a bad situation when you had so many free agents that, you know, were pending, whether that was Bud Dupree, Mike Hilton, Juju Smith-Schuster, Alejandro Villanueva. You knew you weren't going to be able to retain all those guys, especially given the cap situation and the salary cap crunching. But you were able to retain at least Cam Sutton, Juju, Tyson Alualu at least came back, and you re-signed Vince Williams after you cut him. And I think overall, Kevin Colbert's philosophy has always been, you know, not have so many obvious holes in the draft where you feel like you're compelled and obligated to take a certain position, because that's when you reach and that's when you start making some really poor selections. So when you do things like, you know, re-sign Juju, you bring back, you re-sign Cam Sutton, when you re-sign or sort of sign back B.J. Finney and re-sign Vince Williams, you at least plug those holes in the sense of there aren't a ton of glaring needs for this team. There still are a couple, including running back, but that allows you to really focus in on taking running back at 24, or at least early in this draft, as opposed to, you know, what position do we need to take that is so urgent. So again, this roster is worse than where it was, you know, just 6 months ago, but at least you're able to retain, you know, some key guys.
Yeah, and running back is a position where you can't really
take guys for too long, right? You can keep guys for too long. You need to start freshening up.
Yeah, and that's the debate about what they should do in this draft. That number 24, should it be a running back, or does the lack of positional value? Because even if you do take a Najee Harris at 24, you have to do that with the recognition that he's probably not going to be a 10-year guy for you. If you get, you know, the 4 years and the fifth-year rookie option out of him, that's probably a win. So that is kind of the debate you have to have. The other counter argument to that is, if you don't have the feature back and you don't get that guy at 24, is that guy going to be available to you at 55 or in the third round? Probably not. And so if you want that feature every down back, you have to get him early. So you're kind of weighing the risk reward of both.
Hey, Alex, first of all, I'd like to say thanks due to the fact that you are here with us. It's very important for us. And as for my question, I'd like to know, what do you think about our secondary? Let me explain. We lost Steven Nelson, we lost Mike Hilton, Cam Sutton renewed his contract, and so we think that he's going to be the starter in one of those spots. But as for the other, we don't know. We have Justin Lane, our former third-round pick, we have James Pierre, an undrafted free agent, and at least for me, they don't inspire a lot of confidence. So what do you think about our secondary? And do you think that we are going in that route in the first 2 days of the draft? Do you think that it is possible?
Yeah, you knew there were going to be changes there. You knew one of Mike Hilton or Cam Sutton were going to exit. And so, you know, at least you're able to retain Cam Sutton. But the release of Steven Nelson was a total surprise. And I still have trouble figuring out what led to his release and everything that happened there. Just, it was so out of the blue. It just so crazy. And it just happened so fast. So you're right. There are some question marks there. Now, Cam Sutton's going to start as your right outside cornerback in your base defense. The question is, when you go nickel and sub, which are going to be in about 60, 65% of the time, does Sutton move to the slot, or does he stay on the outside? If he moves to the slot, then you're right. You'll have Pierre and Justin Lane battling for those spots. If he doesn't and he stays outside, then I have no idea who your slot cornerback is going to be in 2021. So I'm sure they're going to address it in the draft. I think they're a little more likely to address the slot position than they are on the outside, because they do like James Pierre, and I think Justin Lane gets one more shot this season. But will it be early? There's a chance. I think edge is going to go before cornerback does, but it'll partially depend on the board and what's available to them. If you want any sort of sleeper or dark horse at 24, if, say, Najee Harris is off the board, watch out for Asante Samuel Jr. out of Florida State. He played on the outside primarily in college. I think he'll move to the slot in the NFL because he's a little undersized, but a really strong zone corner that has good ball skills like his dad did, and the Steelers love their bloodlines, whether that's Cam Hayward, Devin Bush, Terrell Edmonds, all dads play in the NFL. Same with Asante Samuel Jr.
Alex, I want to know about your opinion in the inside linebacker position for the next draft. We know the value of the position for the inside linebacker is decreased in the last few years, and we bring back Vince Williams. We cut Vince Williams and bring back. We bring back Robert Spillane. It's a rumor that we're gonna bring you Avery Williams back to Devin Bush. It's gonna come back. It's healthy. Right now is recovering for the last year injury, but I still see some people worry about the position for the draft. I want to know your expectations. If you see value in someone for the inside linebacker pick for the coming draft, if it's not, if you can just ignore, we have other priorities. We have a lot of roles, as you said in the beginning. So inside linebackers must be a priority or no?
I wouldn't call it a priority. I think it's open-ended of whether or not they address it. I think it's a little less likely, obviously, since Vince Williams was brought. Now, obviously, if there was a first or second round talent that's worth taking there, bring back Vince Williams is not going to prevent you from doing that. So a Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah from Notre Dame, I think, would look great in Pittsburgh. He's 21 years old, but a senior. He's actually from the same area Mike Tomlin is, and Tomlin loves those Virginia 757 guys. So it's kind of a connection there. Or maybe a Baron Browning from Ohio State in round two. So I think it maybe lessens the chances of them taking a sixth or seventh round pick at the position, because you do have Vince Williams there for at least one season, plus Robert Spillane, as you mentioned, plus UG3 and Marcus Allen kind of in his second full year of transitioning from strong safety to inside linebacker. But I wouldn't discount it entirely. Like you could see someone third, fourth round come in. Watch out for Derek Barnes from Purdue. Steelers inside linebacker coach Jerry Olsavsky was at his pro day. He's a big guy, a good athlete, played on the edge in 2019, moved to more of an off-ball role in 2020. Again, I think edge is more important than inside linebacker, but I won't say that there's no chance that they won't take inside linebacker. I do think it is possible.
Okay, we have a question from the audience. Gabriel Berardo asking, what do you think, Alex, about the impact of new offensive coordinator, Matt Canada, especially regarding the running game?
Yeah, it's a really good question, and I'm really excited to see what kind of new ideas he has, because this offense needs some new ideas for the run game. I think one of the biggest things that they could do, and I think there's a decent chance they do it, is more pistol offense, because we've always had the debate of why aren't the Steelers under center more often. It's largely been because Ben doesn't like playing under center. It's harder to read a defense, lack of mobility in his older age. He's not been a big fan of it, but shotgun presents some problems in the run game too. It's hard to get that downhill kind of smooth fluid action in the run game, so pistol I think kind of measures the best of both worlds, where you're kind of still in shotgun, you're not having to get away from center, but you have that downhill run game because the back's behind you as opposed to being sidecar next to you. So I know Canada's talked about using pistol before. He likes the idea. He's used it in college before, so I think it's one of the bigger things he can do. But also, new offensive line coach Adrian Clem, what new ideas is he going to present that'll improve this run game? Really, the last since Mike Munchak, the offensive line coach has kind of been the run game coordinator in Pittsburgh. It's been less so on the OC. They work together, of course, but I do think Canada's influence will be felt in this offense, but especially whatever ideas Adrian Clem has, I think will be really interesting to see.
Since we're talking in the coaching position, what are your thoughts on the new contract, the extension for Mike Tomlin? There's some doubt about it. There's people commenting not in a good way because, you know, you're keeping the same coach for more time, not allowing the team to get new ideas, freshening up. Do you like Mike Tomlin getting this extension?
Sure, I was happy with it. And I think what this signals is, because there's so much uncertainty about who's your quarterback going to be a year or two from now, we don't know. Who's your GM going to be a year or two from now, we don't know. Kevin Colbert's been working on year-to-year contracts for a couple seasons now. At least when you have stability at head coach and you know who that guy is going to be through at least 2024, that's going to be the bridge and the leader through this new era of whatever comes next after Big Ben and also Kevin Colbert, because we're just so used to those three guys being there. I mean, Ben's been here since 2004, Colbert since 2000, Tomlin since 2007, and that's going to, two-thirds of that is going to change here probably within the next 12 months. And so you need someone to be that leader in that face to get you through that period. And Tomlin's best traits are about, you know, culture and leadership and kind of being able to withstand those difficult times. So I have some criticism of Tomlin for sure. I think the last decade have been deeply disappointing. 3 playoff wins over 10 years with all this talent, a Hall of Fame quarterback, and just how many good teams there have been. So I don't think Tomlin gets a pass for that. But I think the signal was, and why it was a 3-year extension, which was on the longer end of things, was to say that Mike Tomlin is the guy to take you through this next chapter for Pittsburgh, probably starting in 2022.
Am I the only one surprised of how young Mike Tomlin is? I got really surprised with knowing he's 49.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he was the youngest coach in football when he got hired, and he's still pretty young, I guess, for the NFL. It's kind of crazy. The dude's in his 15th season heading into it, and he's 49 years old. But, you know, Chuck Noll was in his 30s when he got hired. Bill Cowher was in his 30s when he got hired. The Steelers have had that eye for just finding that guy that's in his 30s that can be a 15-year head coach and still be under 50. So that's just a testament to their ability to find that guy and why they've only had 3 head coaches since 1969.
Yeah, and it's like a brand for the Steelers to keep this continually going on. Another one from the audience, Juliano asks about your expectations for trading up this draft. Do you believe the Steelers will trade up or are likely to trade up?
I think it's unlikely just because, as you guys have mentioned, there are so many needs for this team right now. And when you only have 8 picks, 3 in the top 100, there isn't a lot of ammunition to move up. And they're probably going to get fewer compensatory picks for next year than we thought. They're going to get the 3rd for Bud Dupree, but they retain Juju, so no comp pick for him. Villanueva may not net a super high comp pick, etc. So it's always hard to say about trades because you don't really know until it's draft time and you're on the clock or close to being on the clock and you kind of see what the board looks like and what offers are. You know, with trades, it always takes, you know, 2 to tango. You got to have somebody to want to trade with you. So it's just hard to say. I think trading down is more likely than trading up right now. But I think, you know, Kevin Colbert's MO has just been to stay at his spot. I mean, he rarely makes trades mid-draft. It doesn't happen too often. So, you know, you never know till you know. But I think if anything, they'll trade down or just stay at pick 24.
And that's another reason why trading up for Devin Bush was so surprising, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was, he's only made, what, 3 moves up in the first round. That was to get Troy, Santonio, and Devin Bush. So good moves to go up, but he's very selective whenever he does decide to move up.
It's always compensate.
Alex, I'd like to know, how do you rate the importance of Tyson Alualu for our team? Because when we heard that he was going to leave us for Jacksonville, we were all devastated. And when we heard that he reconsidered injured and came back, we were all delighted. So I'd like to hear from you. What do you think about his importance, especially in the run game, since we are in a division with a lot of strong running attacks?
Yeah, I think that last point you made is the most critical one. I know that Tyson Alu is not going to any Pro Bowls anytime soon, but it was so important to get that guy back because you've lost so many key run defenders with Mike Hilton gone. Steven Nelson was a good run defender on the outside corner spot, but you're right. When you're in a division of of Baltimore and Cleveland and even Cincinnati to an extent, you better stop the run. You better stop Lamar Jackson. You better stop J.K. Dobbins. You better stop Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt. And they've done a poor job of that the last probably two seasons. So, I know we're in this era of, Patrick Mahomes and passing the football and that kind of craziness, but my mantra has always been to win the AFC North, you better stop the run. Whoever does that the best is going to be your divisional champion. And so Alualu played really well last year, such a really important guy in the middle, replacing Javon Hargrave. I didn't know how well he was going to play. He was fantastic until that MCL injury kind of slowed him down the back half of the season. But I was super excited to know that he was coming back because he's that cog in the middle. And the last thing I would say, kind of going off that point, again, people say that, base defense is dead. No one plays 3-4. The nose tackle isn't important. Well, they were still in base defense about a third of the time last season. And if you look at just their base defense usage in AFC North games, I think it jumped to like 40 or 45%. So you're almost a 50-50 split of how often you have that nose tackle on the field when you're playing Baltimore, Cleveland, or Cincinnati. So don't tell me base isn't dead or base is dead because it's very much important, especially in those divisional games.
Marcelo de Lima, he makes a really good question. Which position do you think is the thinnest on the roster right now?
I would say two. I think it's tight end. You have a starter in Eric Ebron, and behind that, it's a whole lot of nothing. It's Zach Gentry, who's played about 60, 70 snaps in his career, Kevin Raid, who's got one career NFL game, and a couple of guys on future contracts. And so there's really nothing there. I would love them to re-sign Jesse James. Maybe that'll happen after the draft, but that's a position that probably needs to be addressed in some form or fashion. And then outside linebacker, because again, TJ Watt, Alex Highsmith are your starters. Behind that, though, Cassius Marsh, and again, that's about it. A lot of question marks there. So I think tight end and edge have to be two positions that either get addressed through free agency, what's left of free agency, or more likely via the draft.
Amazing. Gabriel Rezende has another one. This is most likely Ben's last year before retirement. Do you think the team has a plan for replacement, or do you believe we'll get in a quarterback limbo after that for some years?
If they have a plan, they're hiding it pretty well, because I'm not sure what that plan is. The really unique situation with Pittsburgh right now is I don't think they've ever been in this spot before. All four quarterbacks on the roster are not guaranteed to be on the roster next season. Ben's contract is up, Rudolph's contract is up, Dobbs' contract was 1 year, and then Haskins will be a restricted free agent, but who knows what's going to happen with Dwayne Haskins a year from now. So there's a lot of uncertainty, not only in who your starting quarterback is going to be next season, but just what quarterbacks are going to be on your roster in 2022. I have no idea right now. So I still think they could potentially take a mid-round quarterback, have him sit for a season, and at least have that as an internal option heading into the next offseason. But with so many other needs to address, it'll be difficult to do. But honestly, right now, I think their focus is winning now and just kind of addressing that stuff later. I'm sure they have some idea of what they want their future to be, but with those free agents coming up, they're not going to be able to dictate who's staying and who's going. So it'll be a very interesting situation.
Okay, you mentioned the probability of getting a mid-round quarterback, but are you comfortable with that idea, especially with that win-now mentality?
I hate the idea, honestly. I think it's a really bad idea to take a mid-round quarterback just because, how often does that work out? Yes, occasionally it does. Tom Brady, Russell Wilson, but I mean, mostly you get, Mason Rudolph, Josh Dobbs, Omar Jacobs, guys who just don't get the chance to play, and they're here and they're gone. So I would prefer not to do that, but the Steelers have taken a lot of mid-round quarterbacks before, including in 2018 with Mason Rudolph, actually traded up to take Mason Rudolph. So I'm not discounting it. I think it's possible, but I personally would not do it.
Hey, Alex, you are forgetting that Justin Fields is going to fall to our pick.
That's what Cass released mock draft. That's a weird one. I'd be shocked if he did.
I think it's probably the last question we have. Bruno asks, we have a concept, at least here, for draft crushes. The guy who's not your top of mind quarterback prospect, but middle rounds, late rounds, the guy that you watch and fall in love and you need that guy on tape. Traditionally, in this podcast, we never get our draft crushes, with one exception that was Alex Highsmith.
Alex Highsmith last year. It was a true party here for this podcast.
He was Ricardo's crush. So do you have a draft crush this year?
I think the two guys that jumped to mind when you asked that question are two guys from Houston. Houston has so many good prospects this year, and you wouldn't think that because they're not a super big school, but they got a lot of guys that really like Peyton Turner, an outside linebacker. He fits what Steelers look for. He's a big guy, like 6'5", like 250, 260, that has really good bend to turn the corner and get a field, good production as well, and a great personality. I would say another guy, Grant Stewart from Houston as well, just a special teams demon. He's probably never going to be a starter in this league, but can just really be kind of a Tyler Medikevich, type on special teams. And then one guy, just because I've been in these pro day interviews and Zoom calls and stuff, and you get to talk to these guys and meet these guys and learn their story. And one guy that probably won't go super high, and I don't know if I love his tape, but I love him as a person, is Eli Howard from Texas Tech, a defensive lineman, potential outside linebacker. 6 years in college, had injuries, transferred from North Texas, but just a really good guy, a really positive, energetic type of dude. So a lot of guys to root for. I don't know if he might be my draft crush, but he was a really cool guy. So I think getting to know and talk to these people is really important. And I think so much of success is mental. I talk to so many players and they say, the physical aspects are obvious in succeeding in the NFL, but so much of the game is mental and your attitude and your mindset of how you approach the game. And a guy like Eli Howard, I think, has the right mindset to succeed in the NFL.
Perfect. Alex, I know our combine was 25 minutes. We are almost there. But for the last question, actually, is more like a joke that we have here. 2 years ago, when we traded for Micah Fitzpatrick, here in Brazil, the Steelers receive a lot of criticism for the trade and say that was very expensive. And we begin expression we talk here that is caro to represent the trade for Micah Fitzpatrick. Last year when Dave joined us, he entered for this display. He was saying caro. We would like to ask you to say to caro, because Micah Fitzpatrick is more probably that he wasn't expensive for us. So it's just caro. Caro was in high school in 2019. I was at Pittsburgh Steelers and Los Angeles Rams, and I have a few friends by my side, and everyone was like, caro. And was a play that get here, and we do with almost our guests. So if you can say caro would be great for us. The people that will love.
Caro, is that what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yes.
Caro. All right.
If you could say Minka Fitzpatrick is caro, it would be amazing.
Minka Fitzpatrick is caro.
Okay.
It's perfect.
That was good enough.
Your Portuguese is almost good as Dave.
Well, probably it's really poor, because I don't think either of us are probably very fluent in Portuguese.
Yeah, but yeah, just so you know, it really translates directly as Minka Fitzpatrick is expensive.
It's not a kidding. We are not joking you for to say yeah. Caro.
Yeah,
we need to show him later the video, Ricardo.
Yes,
the in Heinz Field,
awesome video. Yes, you shot in Heinz Field. Last question, actually, just to close this up.
Sure.
Did you have any idea how much fans, Steelers fans, football fans you have here in Brazil? How big is football in Brazil?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes I'm reminded of that, especially when I come on shows like this, and thank you so much for having me on. I really appreciate it. But I think what I love about, because what I love about Pittsburgh in particular and the Steelers fandom is that it's truly international. The emails we get from Brazil, from Mexico, from the UK, I think we're constantly, Dave and I are constantly reminded of just how vast Steelers Nation is. And I think it's really cool to get to talk to you guys from all over the world. I love your guys' fandom. I think it's fantastic. And I think that's what makes the Steelers Nation really special, because you're not going to get this with Browns fans or Cardinals fans or something like that. Those fans probably aren't that international, but Steelers fans, I think, have that just vast fan base across the globe. And I think that's what makes this franchise and this fan base extremely special.
Yeah, and to register here, one of our friends, Kai, who was not available tonight, he was really thrilled in an episode you guys read his question, read an email he sent you. He was out of his world.
Yeah, well, we love the support. If it wasn't for you guys, if it wasn't for the support of Steelers Nation, we wouldn't exist. So all the thanks goes to you guys.
So that's it, guys. We are basically on the time we agreed on. So thank you very much, Alex. It's a pleasure to have here. have you here as our guest, and good work on Steer Zippo.
Thank you so much. Anytime you guys want to have me back, I'll be more than happy to join you guys again.
That's it, everyone. SteelersDepot.com. Please keep on giving them views.
Pittsburgh's gone to Super Bowl. Here we go.